Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm Spencer Chase. Our guest this week is New Mexico Democrat and Senate Ag Committee member Ben Ray Lujan. But first, here's this week's headlines. USDA announced nearly $200 million in grants and loans to improve domestic food systems. The funding will be used to lower food costs and expand opportunities for farmers and rural businesses. All told, 185 entities will receive funding through five different programs. The announcement comes as the White House convened the new Council on Supply Chain Resilience earlier this week. In other news, the Biden administration sounded off against Mexico's proposed ban on genetically modified corn imports. A dispute panel is set to hear arguments on the issue. Mexico says its ban on importing GMO corn from the U.S. is based on science. American leaders disagree, arguing Mexico is making a political statement that runs afoul of its commitments under the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement. Canada is on the side of the U.S. in this dispute, unlike the dairy spat between the two countries that went the way of the Canadian government last week. And finally, USDA opened the application process for the new Regional Agricultural Promotion Program. USDA is providing up to $300 million in funding for exporters to break into new trade territories and increase market share in growing markets. Funding will support programs over a five-year span. Applications are due by early February. Boosting trade funding has been a top priority for many ag groups in the next Farm Bill. Senate Ag Committee member Ben Ray Lujan says the funding should help bridge the gap while lawmakers draft new legislation.
I applaud the work that our leaders on the Senate Ag Committee were able to accomplish with the secretary here to support more funding for trade promotion. In New Mexico, this means that there's going to be more support for our farmers, our ranchers, our producers, especially in the spaces of dairy, of pecans, and New Mexico distilleries, specialty butchers, things of that nature. So you can extrapolate that across America. I think this will be well received and necessary to make sure that more people get more help. And that's what this should all be about, is making sure that we have more food, more opportunity, but especially for our producers across America, that we're helping to get their products in more places because everyone loves them. Once they taste whatever it is from that part of America once, they want it every day. And this is the kind of investment that will let that happen.
Mm-hmm. I want to get your thoughts on the upcoming Farm Bill and kind of your role in it. Looking at the Senate Ag Committee, there's 23 members and 21 of them are east of you. The lone exception being Senator Bennett, of course, being directly north of you in Colorado. I say all that to ask you, how do you go about making sure Western and Southwestern agriculture has a seat at the table and is adequately represented in this upcoming Farm Bill dialogue?
I'm very proud to be one of only two Western members on the Senate Agriculture Committee. With it comes immense responsibility, not just for my advocacy for the people of New Mexico, but working with Senator Bennett for all of our brothers and sisters across the Western United States, while working with our colleagues across the rest of America, but ensuring that policies work for everyone. And the one example that I'll give you is some of the language that was put together associated with a drought with the 1-in-4 rule. That works for places where they get a lot of water and it's a little wetter. Not so much in places like New Mexico or in the West, where we have drought conditions, even in a good year. And so it's bringing that advocacy, those voices, front and center with our colleagues on the Agriculture Committee.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned drought, and I want to drill down on that a little bit, because you look at some of the marker bills that you've introduced heading into this Farm Bill process. A lot of them involve producer mitigation for drought circumstances. So I wonder, how do you go about improving producer protection against drought while still being mindful of the very tight budgetary environment that this Farm Bill is being produced in?
Well, Spencer, the one example that I shared, which I'll go back to, is that 1-in-4 rule. When USDA came up with a provision that was well-intentioned for wetter states, they looked at what could be done to ensure that the policy worked better for those communities. that received a lot more water. Well, in places where there's more drought, it just doesn't work. That 1 in 4 rule is actually punitive to producers across the West, anywhere that there's some drought. So providing language that would essentially give the secretary waiver or looking at how these tools could work better for Western states is just one example. Looking at our forests, our wildland fire recovery as well. So we look at those watersheds and how that trickles down, if you will, to touch everyone. There needs to be more work being done to provide help to these families where in the West, that's where all of our forests are. We're seeing intense forest fires out that way as well. So there should be more support to provide help to these communities. And one thing I've done in that space is I've advocated for the elimination of cost share for these little communities so that they're not just left to fend for themselves, but they're able to do more work within that forest structure where they're all living. But that's going to help provide more access to water, to good water, clean water, prevent flooding down the road as well. The Colorado River is getting a lot of attention across America right now. We need to make sure we fix that as well. But it's one at a time. But it's the West. And it's our daily lives compared to what others experience just, you know, day to day.
We'll have more from Senator Ben Ray Lujan right after this.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together. We celebrate together. But we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers' back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
Regenerative poultry production is a process by which nature can actually recapture and restore the energy that is being taken out of a space.
Farm Credit helped Rahe build his dream of regenerative poultry farming and encouraging fellow immigrants to find community in agriculture.
Nothing beats a farm. I'm just pursuing happiness.
Learn more at farmcredit.com/beginning.
Welcome back. Senator Ben Ray Lujan is one of just a handful of members of Congress coming from an agricultural background. He says while that may have helped him in the Farm Bill education process, the learning curve is still steep for him and other members lacking that background.
Education is absolutely key when it comes to the Farm Bill. Members that have not grown up on small farms or producers themselves, they have, I think, a lot more to learn about in some of these specific areas than others. And then there's a difference between each of the zones across America as well, specialty crops across the country, the magnitude of the economy in these areas where there's food deserts across America. There's so much to learn about in understanding how it has to come together for the greater good of all of our producers, for access to food, for being smarter about doing things. There's a big curve here to go through, but in the end, I want to commend everyone for coming forward and sharing information, especially those not from New Mexico that are willing to come talk to me to better understand what the impact on them is.
We're right around the corner from the 2024 election year, and that's the Farm Bill extension timeframe as well. Can you and your colleagues move a Farm Bill in an election year?
Absolutely. I'm very proud of the work that our colleagues have been doing. Where I'm disappointed is that extension or the reauthorization, if you will, the passing of the Farm Bill was not completed on time. But our colleagues came together to have a 1-year extension. And Chair Stabenow has been clear that she wants to see this done in the first quarter of the calendar year. So I think that's a good place to start as we push to get this done. And in all my conversations with Democratic and Republican members in the House and the Senate, people want to get this done. So I remain optimistic that we will have a Farm Bill and that we could see this as early as the end of the first quarter of the calendar year.
Mm-hmm. Wrapping up on this train of thought, what level of concern do you have, if any, that some of the broader legislative dysfunction that we're seeing on Capitol Hill right now could potentially bleed into farm policy and the next Farm Bill?
Well, there's always a challenge. When we're working on policy in the Congress across America, whether it's a school board, it's a state legislature, or it's the United States Senate. But what I've learned in the Senate is things come together. As long as we keep our attention where it needs to be, we're willing to talk to one another, you can find solutions to where those challenges exist. And it certainly feels that in this particular space, that why I'm optimistic that we will have a farm bill early in the calendar year. It's incredible how things can come together here. And that always gives me optimism.
That's about what we have time for right now. So we'll wrap up the conversation there. Let's get together sometime soon over some New Mexico chilies and continue this conversation later. Senator Lujan, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Spencer. We'll get that chili for you.
We'll be right back to hear from this week's panel. But first, our Hannah Pagel walks us through the retiring members of Congress in this week's Map It Out.
The number of lawmakers not running for re-election is growing as we approach the upcoming election year. You can see here the areas represented by current members of the House and Senate opting against running for re-election. So far, 38 lawmakers have decided not to seek another term, 31 from the House and 7 from the Senate. The biggest retiring name for agriculture is Michigan Senator Debbie Stabenow. The current Senate Ag Committee leader plans to retire after her term ends at the end of 2024. House Ag Committee member Alyssa Slotkin is giving up her seat in the House to run in the Democratic primary for Michigan's Senate vacancy. Two ag lawmakers plan to leave Capitol Hill to run in gubernatorial races next year. Senate Ag member Mike Braun plans to run as a Republican in Indiana, and House Ag member Abigail Spanberger is running as a Democrat in Virginia. For AgriPulse, I'm Hannah Pagel.
Did you know AgriPulse has all your favorite podcasts, including Open Mic, Newsmakers, and Drive Time? Take us wherever you go. Subscribe at AgriPulse.com or on Spotify, Google Play, or Apple Podcasts.
Agriculture Future of America is a nonprofit building transformational leaders in food and agriculture. AFA prepares college students to join the workforce as innovative and engaged young professionals who will shape the future of agriculture. Head to agfuture.org to find out how you can get involved.
The Senate and House Ag Committees are busy working on the next Farm Bill, which will cover commodities, specialty crops, livestock, and more. This legislation will impact every farmer, rancher, and rural business for the next 5 years. Make sure you don't miss insights and analytics that only AgriPulse and its top-notch team of well-connected experts can provide. Register today for a free trial at agripulse.com and click the subscribe button or email us at pam@agri-pulse.com. You don't want to miss this Farm Bill coverage.
Welcome back to AgriPulse Newsmakers. Going to have a panel discussion here discussing the Farm Bill, its passage prospects, as well as some policy specifics headed into the 2024 now Farm Bill debate. Joined for that conversation by Tara Smith with the Tory Advisory Group and Mike Lavender with the National Sustainable Agriculture Coalition. Appreciate both of you taking the time. And Tara, I want to go to you first, because as we look at the calendar, look at the legislative realities that are presented to us, we know that the Farm Bill is not going to be passed in 2023. I think we can all safely agree on that. But I do wonder, as the extension carries into 2024, what do you think the prospects for 2024 passage and consideration look like at this point?
Well, I would never want to be the one to vote against the Ag Committee getting their work done. Having been a staffer on Ag Committee before, always want to side with them getting the job done. There are obviously a number of hurdles, and we could all list them, right? It's that it's an election year. It's that we're not in session a lot of days in 2024. We've got money issues. We've got, open rules on the floor. I think the biggest challenge, though, as we look ahead, sort of the ultimate challenge, is that slim majority in the House of Representatives. You have a four vote majority in the House. It's been very difficult to govern and navigate with such a slim majority. The bottom line is that realistically, to get a farm bill across the final finish line, you're going to have a bipartisan package. But I think if you look historically, over the last couple of farm bills, the fewest Republican votes we've lost on a farm bill is about 20. That's more than four. And so I think the bottom line is that there's just a core group of Republicans that will not vote for a farm bill. And therefore, they're going to have to draw on some of those Democrat votes in order to get it across the finish line. Mm-hmm.
So, Tara, about a year ago at this time, we were still digesting the results of the 2022 midterms. And it was a really popular saying within kind of the ag lobbying circles that, holy cow, we've got a lot of new members to educate, a lot of folks who never voted on a farm bill before, going to need to go to Capitol Hill and do some education. A year later, you've now got an additional year to do that. But how do you and how should the ag community kind of feel about the level of member education that was done over the past year? Are y'all on good footing or is there more to be done?
I mean, I think the agriculture community always punches above its weight. I think, you know, you look at how many farmers there are in the U.S., but you look at their representation here in D.C. and how active those farmers are in D.C. in terms of educating their members. And I think the ag community overall has done a really great job of reaching out to those new members, building those relationships, getting them on farms, and making sure that they understand the key issues. I think as you look ahead, though, if this does bleed into 2025, we could find ourselves right back in that same situation in 2025. We've got a lot of ag committee members that are sort of in those toss-up races or those really difficult races. So all the more reason for us to get it done in 2024.
Mm-hmm. Well, and let's talk about 2024, Mike. Obviously, 2024, a year divisible by four, not only means it's an Olympic year and a leap year, but it's also a presidential election year. You know, all of the House and a third of the Senate up for grabs as well. How do you think that impacts the politics and the prospects for moving a farm bill?
I don't think the election year itself is going to be a driving factor in whether we do or do not get a farm bill. I ultimately think it's going to come down to whether we can get a strong bipartisan bill out of the House of Representatives. And so I think for many folks, a strong bipartisan bill means, you know, a bill that protects the Inflation Reduction Act investments that Congress made a couple of years ago. And so it will really come down to a bipartisan bill out of the House of Representatives. And I think one of the heartening things that we saw after the extension was passed, the 2018 Farm Bill a few weeks ago, is I think you saw a great urgency from a number of stakeholders, including NSAC, saying that 2024 is the time to enact a new farm bill.
We'll have more from our panel right after this.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together. We celebrate together. But we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers' back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
Looking closer, seeing further. That's how we do it. At Curious Plot, we're driven to find what's next for agriculture, animal care, and food. We stay curious because that's what it takes to grow understanding. That's how we plot strategies and tell stories that get results time after time. Marketing, communications, and consulting that look closer and see further. Curious Plot. We can't wait to help you tell your story.
Welcome back. Many Republicans are hoping the next Farm Bill could include language to address the growing cost of nutrition programs. But Mike Lavender with the National Sustainable Agriculture Coalition says doing so could jeopardize Democratic support.
It's hard to see a bipartisan bill getting done with that route, frankly. I think obviously we know Ranking Member David Scott on the House side. This is not his first farm bill, and he has a ton of experience in many of the farm bills he's worked on, right? Nutrition and the protection of nutrition funding has been a key issue for the Democratic caucus. So he is an expert and a leader in that area, and we know many other members of the House on the Democratic side are focused on that. I think you can also look back to some of Chairwoman Stabenow's comments in her speech on the floor about a month ago. To me, and I think to the evidence points to, there are red lines there and of how we're going to get a bipartisan bill. And I don't think if the House is going to produce a product that crosses some of those red lines, that it's going to receive widespread bipartisan support.
Well, and Mike, there appears to be still remaining at this point some really broad areas of disagreement in terms of funding source, funding allocations, how they might go about increasing commodity program supports, whether or not that's even necessary, the future of nutrition funding, et cetera. There's a lot of things still up in the air at this point, even given the fact that the committees have been working on the bill all year. From the chair that you're sitting in, are those discrepancies going to be resolvable to the point that a bipartisan bill can advance?
I think so. You could call me an eternal optimist, but I think so. I think the relationship that Senator Stabenow and Senator Bozeman have, I have no doubt that they will be able to make progress at the end of the day, because I think there's urgency there to get a bill done. But I know that, you know, certainly from the NSAC seat, we don't want a bad bill, right? There's a good, strong bipartisan bill out there, and we think we can get there. Keep in mind, this is no secret, we're almost to the fifth anniversary of the passage of the 2018 Farm Bill. And if you think about all, we're in a completely different world than we were in 2018. And all the things that our country, that farmers, ranchers, and food system stakeholders have gone through during that time, there's a real need for updated farm policy. So there are tough conversations ahead on the budget, and it's going to require being scrupulous across the board, including on farm safety net programs.
Mm-hmm. Tara, I want to wrap up with you because we've seen some comments from some ag lawmakers, including not the least of which the chairs Stabenow and Thompson, discussing the idea of doing things like increasing premium subsidies, perhaps to incentivize some producer participation in higher coverage levels. Wondering your thoughts kind of at a high level on kind of the viability of that headed into more of the nitty gritty farm bill debate here in the near future.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I'm too surprised to hear them going that direction, simply because we've had so many years of really large ad hoc disaster packages going out the door. And ad hoc disaster, you know, it needs to be done sometimes, but it's not necessarily the best way to go in terms of farmers getting aid when they need it, in terms of taxpayers and the dollars being spent responsibly, in terms of money actually going to the farmers who need it and who have had a loss. It's just not the ideal system for getting money to farmers in a disaster. Whereas I think folks recognize that crop insurance is probably the better way to get money to farmers when they need it and when disaster strikes. So looking for ways to improve that system, I think is really smart, and I think is a much better use of taxpayer dollars than probably additional ad hoc disaster assistance. You know, affordability is really important, and we've always talked about crop insurance as a big tent. We want to be there for as many farmers and as many regions of as many different crops of all different sizes as possible. And so if they can find ways to make the product more affordable to some farmers that maybe can't afford to buy up policies right now at higher levels, I think that's a really good goal. Obviously not naive to the fact that that's going to cost money, and that's probably going to be the biggest struggle moving forward.
Well, plenty of struggles to assess moving forward as folks look to move another farm bill. And for now, we'll leave the conversation here. Tara, Mike, thanks for joining us. We'll be right back with more AgriPulse Newsmakers. But first, our Hannah Pegel walks us through the U.S. role in the global cotton market in this week's Ag by the Numbers.
The United States is the worldwide leader in cotton export value. According to United Nations and National Cotton Council figures, the U.S. led the way in 2022, making nearly $9 billion. That's a 46% global market share. Brazil and Australia each account for more than 15%, while India and the European Union account for 6 and 4% respectively. All other countries combine for the remaining 10%. Some of the countries that import cotton from the U.S. include China, Vietnam, and Mexico. This global market dominance is expected to continue. USDA's 10-year projections for American cotton exports show long-term growth. Between 2021 and 2022 alone, American cotton exports increased more than 56%. For AgriPulse, I'm Hannah Pagel.
It's not as simple as just to wake up one day and go, I want to be a conservation farmer. You're changing how your farming practice is done. You're changing your operation.
Farm Credit supported John and Kelly Watley as they shifted to more sustainable farming, improving the environment where they farm and live. Learn more at farmcredit.com/climate.
The Senate and House Ag Committees are busy working on the next Farm Bill, which will cover commodities, specialty crops, livestock, and more. This legislation will impact every farmer, rancher, and rural business for the next 5 years. Make sure you don't miss insights and analytics that only AgriPulse and its top-notch team of well-connected experts can provide. Register today for a free trial at agripulse.com and click the subscribe button, or email us at pam@agri-pulse.com. You don't want to miss this Farm Bill coverage.
Thanks again for tuning in for another episode of AgriPulse Newsmakers. Before we let you go, here's what's on the horizon for the upcoming week. The House Ag Committee will meet Wednesday for a Member Day hearing, and our team is hitting the road. Sarah Wyant is headed to the National Grain and Feed Association's get-together in Louisville. Steve Davies will be at the American Seed Trade Association's convention in Orlando, and Phil Brasher will be at the Sustainable Ag Summit in Charlotte. We'll have all the latest on AgriPulse.com. For AgriPulse Newsmakers, I'm Spencer Chase. Have a good one. Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. For more ag policy news, visit AgriPulse.com. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more.